a podcast featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. This is Manna.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Manna Podcast, featuring ordinary men of extraordinary faith. I'm your host, Jeff Peterson. Now, none of the guys that you'll meet on this podcast would consider themselves to be extraordinary, but it's their humble, holy way of living. That's exactly what makes them extra, and I am excited for you to meet them. So we're going to talk a little baseball today, both literally and figuratively. Now, my affinity for the game of baseball far exceeds my ability to play the game of baseball. And I'll always contend that if baseball had a designated fielder position, I maybe could have had a shot at playing past ninth grade. But in fact, I remember vividly the day that I faced my first curveball, which was the beginning of the end for me, and the very exaggerated reaction that I had to it. Now, mind you, aside from watching baseball on TV as a young boy, I had never seen a curveball up close and personal before. So as I saw this ball hurling toward my head, probably not even that fast, but at the time it seemed like it was coming at 100 miles an hour, I did what I thought any sensible person should do. And I literally ran out of the batter's box. There was no cool like back bend, with my feet firmly planted. I just full on flight. I just tore out of the batter's box. And of course, as I was running away toward the dugout, the ball sharply curved in, hence the name, for yet another called third strike. Just one of many that dotted my very short career as a baseball player. And today's guest was no doubt in that dugout all those years ago, justifiably laughing at me at the time and now with me about that very dubious memory. Today's guest and I have had a lot of great memories growing up together in our hometown of Annandale and staying very connected through sports and school and jobs and family and some of the most loyal friends any guys could have. And unlike my reaction to the curveball that I ran away from on that baseball diamond, our guest has taken the curveballs that life has thrown his way with much more calm, a lot more courage, and a courageous demeanor that echoes not only his real life baseball skills, which are myriad, but also his character. He's a beloved teacher and coach, son, brother, friend, and a dad who does not duck away or run away from those real or figurative curveballs that life throws him. So let's meet today's man-a-man, Mr. Billy Porter. Hey, Billy.
Hello, Jeff. How you doing there, bud?
Really great. I really appreciate you being on the big show. And as anybody who is now listening and like, oh my gosh, there's Billy Porter. Billy Porter and baseball, those two names were synonymous growing up where we grew up. And not only was it a big deal for you, but it was also the image that I'm sure most all people have of you and baseball, especially when we were younger, was also with your dad. Because you and your dad and baseball, it's like you guys were the trifecta. It was like inseparable. And so I kind of want to start with there. Obviously on Manna, we talk a lot about dads and role models and all that kind of stuff. And it seems like baseball was a really defining activity and just thing that really brought you and your dad together as you were kind of coming up. So let's maybe just start there. How early did that start with you and your dad?
Well, it goes as far back as you can remember as a child. My dad was the head baseball coach in Maple Lake, and he was a longtime teacher there, and he coached certainly baseball. That was his passion. But he coached football and he coached basketball. And so we got started, probably three when I could remember. And there's pictures of me when he was still playing town ball. And, I could barely hold the bat. I'd have a 34-inch bat when I am, 2 foot two or whatever I was at the time. Not that I'm much taller now, but so it's just one of those early things that was instilled in me. And certainly, if you call it a passion, I think it goes more than a passion. Baseball in our family was basically ingrained in our livelihood for all those years. Certainly, come spring and summer, we spent hours, years on that baseball diamond. So, three on up, three all the way, still going, still have a passion for the game.
Yeah. Well, and, I don't mean to, write too much into it, but, a lot of people romanticize baseball beyond the game itself and what it symbolizes and, all the different sort of poetry that comes along with it. As it related to the relationship with your dad, I mean, did you guys find, because a lot of times people talk about, like, especially fathers and sons, there's such great conversations that happen, when, they're doing something else. They're playing catch or they're shooting baskets or they're hunting or something like that. Did you find that your relationship with your dad was growing as you were just, as the baseball was also kind of evolving throughout the years?
Well, they say how sports mimics life. I mean, in baseball, we had a lot of the same similarities as we had at home. I mean, he would try to instruct me and give me his guidance, and sometimes I would push back and we would get into arguments. And so baseball and life were somewhat similar. And then there was a time where I thought I knew better than he did. And he didn't understand why I wouldn't listen to him, and I don't understand why he was yelling at me. So we'd, create conflict. But, then with a day or an hour or whatever, passing of time, the respect, love, adoration, whatever term you'd like to use, we always knew it was there. That was the foundation. Greatly respect my dad and all that he's done for me.
Yeah,
it's been a great grounding influence in my life. And what was unique is my dad was teaching over in Maple Lake, but you and I and went to Annandale. They neighbor each other. So not only did I have the influence of a lot of those great Annandale coaches, Skip Dolan, Craig Dizell, Rick Wahlberg, but there's a lot of great people over in Maple Lake too. Bruce Bakeberg, Joe Nett, Dale Decker,
Gordy Peterson.
So I had a lot of good positive male influences, other than my dad, but, teachers that, really grounded me as I grew up. So.
Well, and I kind of wanted to ask about that, because you were and you are also, you, as I mentioned in your intro, you have taken all of the great lessons and examples that you saw as a player, and now you are a coach. Now you're actually in that position of mentoring and really being that kind of an example. But going back to your own experience, who were some of the guys? You mentioned some of them by name, but can you remember, because there's so many coaches, but like who, if you can remember, who was one of the first, coaches or maybe teachers that you really kind of felt like, okay, this is like, I'm not even related to this guy. You know what I mean? Like, this guy doesn't have to really care as much about me as he does. But were there any people early on that really made that sort of indelible impression?
Well, you mentioned my dad. Obviously, he was number one. But then the thing that I admired or respected about some of our Annandale coaches, and Craig Dizell was our Broncos coach, if you remember back those days at behind Bendix Elementary. And him and Skip Dolan, Ron Starkey, they were kind of on that first wave, I guess you'd say, of non-old school teaching, they did not have to yell and ride you or, get on you to get their point across. Mm-hmm. They had expectations. They had, demands, for lack of a better term. They would hold you accountable. I guess that would be the way I'd say it. They'd hold you accountable, but they're not going to, chew you out. They're not going to chew you up and down and make you feel bad. So And I had, you know, combinations of coaches over the years, as I'm sure you did too, where some of them were more of that old school authoritative type, mm-hmm. and some of them were more of a, you know, that nurturing positive relationship type. And certainly over my coaching career, when I was younger, you know, I was probably more of that authoritative type of guy. And, but then trying to keep growing, you try to get away from that. And I think, you know, knowing my personality as you do, I you know, that yelling type of thing, just, I didn't feel true to myself doing that, even though it still comes out from time to time. But I tried to get away from that and tried to build more relationship building, more of that type of thing.
So. Yeah. Well, and I do think, and we've had other guys on the podcast that talk about, you know, kind of how we were raised, and a lot of people out there listening were raised in similar situations where, you know, the community, you know, your teachers were your coaches, and your coaches were your, you know, they lived in your neighborhood, and you saw them at church, and you saw them at the grocery store, and everything was very connected. And so, you know, yeah, these authority figures weren't just completely isolated, you know, figures that would just come in for the practice and then leave, you know, and I mean, these are people that, you know, they're family friends, and, you know, so it's, I think that relationship was even easier, or maybe more expected. But how do you feel, you know, growing up in that same environment, you know, because the other thing that's very connected with that is, you know, things like church and just, you know, being a good person and respect and all those kinds of things. How, when you think back to your childhood, I mean, cause you know, we're all going to church and we're all doing Sunday school and all that kind of stuff. How big of a deal was faith, like, as a specific ingredient into the sort of character building of the Porter household as you were a kid?
Well, and you and I have talked about this a little bit. And I heard you mention, like, with Johnny, John Farrell. Hi, Johnny. hopefully he listens. You know, it was a stereotype, but for me, you know, St. John's is what they called the loose Lutherans, you know. You know, the running joke is, how do you keep a Lutheran out of church? You confirm them and away they go. But the thing I liked in the ELCA for me, or at least in that doctrine, was it allowed you to explore your faith freely. And you kind of got to make your own way in your faith. And for me, you know, going to church and, like you said, seeing the coaches and seeing your teachers and seeing just a lot of good people, you know, it centered your morals and gave you a compass. And I think, as you and I know, sometimes our compasses stray from mm-hmm. from east to west to south to, you know, mm-hmm. and then we try to get it back north again. But the ability of that type of setting for me to explore my faith, and it's, you know, it's, I think I still explore it to a degree. As to what, for me, it's based in morals, values, getting back to your moral compass. I'm sure you've heard of a true north.
Yeah.
You know, and I've strayed plenty off of that true north. But at the center of it all, you know, I knew where my compass was trying to head back to, you know. Yeah. And that has always what's kind of kept me grounded and kept me going in the right direction, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, speaking of North, I mean, I didn't plan on making this segue, but since you brought it up, I mean, so, yeah, because I did want to actually talk about college and, you know, as we all kind of went off to our respective, you know, kind of next chapters, you went way North to play baseball. I mean, you went up where nobody, none of them went. And so you were all by yourself, you know, a long ways away from again, a very small town, very tight knit town. What was it like? Because you and I have never talked about this, but what was it like for you? And obviously, you know, you had your baseball team, and so there was a built-in, you know, maybe a little community up there for you, but you're still on your own. And what was it like, you know, making that jump? And what did you, you know, you talk about kind of retaining that sort of moral compass. What did you, how did you do it? Like, what were some ways that you kept, you know, tethered to what had sort of like, you know, shaped you leading up to that when you're all by yourself, like 4 hours away?
Well, the thing, I grew up on Sugar Lake. I love Sugar Lake out there in Annandale, out in the country a bit, as you know. And a little bit more of an introverted personality. And I never really minded being on my own or being, you know, having downtime. So for me, having that downtime didn't bother me that much. So, you know, just like any other, and we'll get back to the baseball, but, you know, I wanted to play college baseball, and I inquired at the University of Minnesota, St. Cloud State, you know, Mankato. They all had their needs filled at the positions I played, and that was, you know, outfield. When I went to Bemidji, they had a need and an opportunity. So that's why I ended up at Bemidji via Morris. I went to Morris for a couple of years and battled through a knee injury. And that just didn't feel like the right fit for me. And then getting up to Bemidji, getting up there and just being in that environment, it just fit perfectly. A lot of the guys that played there, you know, I still have wonderful lifelong friendships, but from smaller towns, very similar types of personalities to what we had in Annandale. And it just worked. It just fit. And those times I had up there really worked. And I would say this too, you know, those first 2 years of college, I don't know about you, but I was a little bit of a lost soul. And it allowed me, you know, going up to Bemidji to be like, hey man, like if you're going to get through this, you better center yourself a little bit and buckle down. So, you know, I was able to kind of, you know, find my north again, going up there. And fortunately, you know, ended up going up there and doing pretty well in the classroom and on the athletic field. So,
yeah. So then scoot ahead, you know, life throws everybody curveballs. You have such, and have always had such a great way of dealing with them and wonderfully taking what looked like, I think, a curveball. It must have looked like a curveball at the time, but I'm going to finish the baseball metaphor here, but really, you know, kind of knocking it out of the park with, and of course, I'm talking about your daughter. So, you know, 17, I can't believe it's that long ago, 17 years ago, Paige comes into the world. It's not a traditional, you know, kind of fatherhood story that you've written with Paige, you know, over the last 17 years or so, but it's one of just unconditional love, and one that, you know, speaking as a friend and somebody who's watched you, you know, be a father, grow as a father, and just be a great example of a great father. It's just been so inspiring. Take us back, and you don't have to get into all the nitty-gritty if you don't want to, but take us back a little bit to 17 years ago when, you know, you find out, hey, whoa, like, I'm going to be a dad here. This is not necessarily what was in the plan. And just kind of how you kind of process that and got through it, because you made some really key decisions that, again, are have been very inspiring for those that have been watching.
Well, I would go back to when you were in Atlanta way back.
Yeah.
When, you know, you, I mean, I know you don't know this, but, you know, I think we all observe and learn from each other. And, you know, just the devotion that you showed to Betsy Wayman. All good things came out of the class of 1989. You know that. and one thing, when you guys had your first child and you got going a little bit younger than the rest of us did, you said, you know, when that child is born, that instant feeling of, oh my goodness, like, this is for real. Like that, like you say, undevoted, unconditional love that just becomes a part of you. And it was almost as you said, and I remember you saying that. And as soon as she was born, 62-hour labor, and she was 6 weeks premature, and then we ended up having to take her C-section, you know, and then as soon as Paige was delivered, just like you said, instantaneously, just this rush of unconditional love, knowing, and I just knew, I mean, it, and I'm sure you felt the same way. I just knew that I'm not going anywhere. I mean, and her mother and I, honestly, you know, we did not get married, and we had to work through a lot of challenges along the way. I mean, and I won't go too far into the weeds on that as far as, you know, co-parenting goes. But, you know, you have, just like a marriage or just like anything, you have ups and downs and challenges. And you got to, you know, sometimes really fight for the place in the world as a co-parenting. I don't want to call it single father because I'm not. It's because you're co-parenting. Yeah. And you have to learn how to respect that for the other person as well, which does offer challenges. It's, you know, I'm talking about Paige's mom, Jen. And, you know, whether we like it or not, we went on this journey together and we'll continue to. But it's just having, you know, getting back to that true north, knowing that you're not going anywhere. Your compass is staying north. No. And you're going to do your best to do your best. And, you know, the compass spins all around the dial, but it ends up back going north. And that, it was just never a question. You know, it's, I'm here, I'm there, I'm not going anywhere. And I'm going to be as involved as I can be, because that's just the way it is. So.
Yeah. Well, and as I say, it's been a real great example for all of us. I mean, and you know, whether, you know, it's conventional, unconventional, it doesn't matter, because it, like you said, your true north in this aspect of your life has been Paige and will always be Paige. And as long as that's, as long as it keeps coming back to that position on the compass, just, you can't go wrong. You know, love will not, you can't go wrong with love. So that's my little hallmark Hoda to that thing. But it has just been a wonderful, wonderful thing to see. And as I say, an inspiration to all of us. So, all right. Well, hey, we are already at the fun segment of the show, which is where we ask the same three questions of every guest and just see what they have to say. We've asked a lot of these questions, or we've asked these same questions to a lot of guests, so we've got a lot of data points here. So let's jump right in. Fun segment question number one. If Jesus knocked on your door tomorrow morning and just wanted to hang out for the day, what are you going to do with Jesus?
No, this is a good question. There'd be an acclimation period for Jesus, I think, because he lived in the year zero and spoke Arabic, I would think. So, but we're going to go a little bit different route because I know the intention of the question. You know, I would want to, well, a couple different things. One selfish one, but I would want to travel around, you know, and go to like Djibouti, Africa, or a child cancer ward, and be like, yo, dude, like, what's up with this? You know, like, where does this fit in? And then swing by Mar-a-Lago and be like, you know, what's up with this? You know, like, or, you know, Manhattan, a gated community, and, you know, what's, you know, explain this to me, you know, and it'd be interesting to hear what he'd say, or if he'd just say, yeah, isn't that something? It's just kind of like, It's just kind of the way it is. I mean, and just maybe have a conversation with him and see what's this all about.
Yeah.
Because I kind of got that inquisitive, and I think you do too. We have that inquisitive nature, just lifelong learning type of thing. And like, more than anything, I'd be like, dude, what is up with all this stuff?
Yeah, so, such a range.
Yeah.
The range of experiences and yet all emanating from the same God and the same universe. You're right. It would definitely be.
Yeah, my selfish thing. And then we zip back in time to 1988. And he let me take that Kirk Gibson at bat, you know, where he hit that home run off of Eckersley. Yeah. to have that, I'd want to know what that felt like. That's my selfish, very selfish thing, is like, hey, do you mind if we switch places here for the next 5 years?
Oh, I could totally see you rounding the bases. That'd look good on you for sure. All right. Fun segment question number two. If you could And you don't have to go all the way back to St. John's if you don't want, but you can. It's one of those flexible questions. But if you could go to church with any other guy, living or dead, famous or not, who would you be going to church with?
Well, family would always be number one, you know, selfishly. But for the fun segment, I would choose somebody like a John Daly or a Babe Ruth or, you know, we're going to throw in like a Joan Jett. These just these unabashed, you know, like, hey, I am who I am. And like Trace Adkins said, hey, I know right. I just don't always do right. I mean, and then kind of like, you know, just go through the whole church thing. And then I envision like Daly, like then going out in the parking lot and Bailey, like, or Daly taking a drag and then sipping on a beer and be like, dude, what do you think? Like, what do you think? Where are you at with all this? And, and I just, you know, him or the Babe Ruth or somebody and just be like, you know, what's your feeling on all this? you know, that's the thing with Daly, you know, you love his honesty. He's like, yeah, I mess up a lot. Yeah. But I'm going to admit to my mistakes and we'll see where that gets me, I guess. You know, well, but he's not going to apologize for him.
No. So. And hey, you know, you look at some of the pillars of the church today, we're all broken people. And some of the greatest saints that we have are guys that grew up like Daly, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And they turned out okay.
Some dynamic personality just that you know is flawed and just be like, what do you think?
Awesome. I love it. All right. Fun segment question number three. Take us home here. If you could give just one piece of advice to a younger man about living just a good life, you know, a good life of faith, a confident life, you know, having that moral compass that you talk about, that maintaining that true north, what would be that one piece of advice be that you'd give a younger man?
Give yourself grace and patience in your faith and in your life. Just, I think as a tendency, we are hard on ourselves. Give yourself some grace. And I've mentioned that to you, I think, before too, Jeff, is that, you know, give yourself a little grace, because I know you're really hard on yourself too. But I think that's what makes us stay in that true north, is being a little bit critical of ourselves. And be patient in your faith. My faith is not one that is traditional. I have a strong faith in humanity that there's enough people trying to do the right thing that, you know, we're going to get through this. You know, and that's what I ground my faith on, is doing that. I try to, you know, get back to doing the right thing as much as I can. And if I can just spin off a little bit, you know, you see people that go to church and once they leave church, they go back to this life of debauchery, for lack of a better term. But they go back to church. And then it's like, if you sit through, you know, the benediction and Apostles' Creed, and well, you're all better now. And for me, I guess I flipped it a little bit. I try to live a life of, you know, values and morals, and then and ground myself that way, and then get back to church on occasion. I mean, and I'll be honest, you know, in that, you know, you went to church today and I didn't, but I still have that faith. I go back to the faith of being a good person, of having that moral compass, of pointing yourself north. And then, you know, where that leads me to, we'll find out, you know, but I am comfortable in that way for where my faith takes me. I don't know if that's the answer. that's the long answer.
Well, no, and I think what I'm hearing is, you know, irrespective of where it happens, there's a relationship that you have with God and with your faith that is with you wherever, you know, and whenever. And like you say, sometimes the compass can spin a little bit, or maybe get a little, for all of us. I mean, all of us get, even those that are going to church every day. I mean, that's just the way, that's the way we are. And so what I'm hearing is a real deep commitment to that relationship and making sure that the compass is still in the pocket and that it's being used. So
I liked when you were texting me, you're like, you know, if that's God's work, you know, bringing us back to that north, then it is.
All right. Well, Billy, it has been a real, even though you were a little, had a little bit of trepidation about being here, this is exactly where, at least, well, I'll speak for myself. This is exactly where I needed to be for the last half hour. And so I just really appreciate you.
I appreciate the opportunity, and, you know, you have a lot of good people on here. I enjoy the show. So it keeps me pointing north. So, all right, bud.
Thanks again.
We'll see ya.
Thank you for listening to Manna. If you have any questions or recommendations for future guests, send them to mannapodcast@gmail.com.